I have the honor of introducing our speaker today, Bob Bly. He's been a full-time freelance direct response copywriter since 1982. He's the author of more than 90 books, including The Big Book of Words You Should Know to Sound Smart from Adams Media and The Copywriter's Handbook from Henry Holt. His articles have appeared in Cosmopolitan, Writer's Digest, New Jersey Monthly, and many others. And he's got a batch of awards, including the AWAI Copywriter of the Year, a DMA Gold Echo Award, and honorable mention at the New York Book Festival. So with no further ado, Bob Bly.
Thank you. Great. Thank you. So there's a limit on this to how close I can get the microphone. Can everyone hear me fine? Because usually I can project to a room even if the microphone's dead. So what? I have to be in this microphone. I wish I could get it a little closer, but I can't. So today I want to talk about what I consider the 80-20 rule for prospering as a freelance writer. And this is a technique by which you can earn a six-figure annual income, 100, 200, 300, 400, $500,000 a year or more. And you can earn and accumulate a seven-figure net worth while you're relatively young. And you can enjoy your writing. So here's the problem I've seen with freelance writing. And see if you disagree with it. It seems that there are two paths which writers are sometimes almost forced to choose from. One is, I want to make money. I got a family to support. I got a mortgage to pay. Or worse than that, I have a studio apartment in Manhattan and I have to pay the rent on that. I couldn't even do that, but and you got to earn money. But the problem is, a lot of the things that people find to earn money as a freelancer to make six figures kind of bore them. Like, I know one guy who a few years ago got into writing pay-per-click ads for Google. So he writes and manages Google pay-per-click ad campaigns. But can you pour your heart and soul out in 135-character ad word ad? You know, it's not that fulfilling to him. When I first got into freelancing, I knew a guy in New Jersey, Bob Otterborg, who specialized, and he made really good money. He wrote annual reports. He got $10,000 for an annual report. He wrote about 10, 11 of them a year. But did anyone here, while growing up, ever dream of writing the Great American Annual Report? So, you know, he made good money, but it was not, it didn't fulfill his soul, let's say. Then there's the other side, where, and I don't know why we're getting a Google Chrome alert, I'll see if I can get rid of that. Just give me a second. Good. Okay. Don't ask me again, or I'll snap you in half over my knee, which would hurt me more than it would you. But I meant the computer, not you. So then there's, you know, people I've known who are artistic and literary writers. And the other Robert Bly, who writes poetry, makes a lot of money, but most don't. I met a guy who I became a fan of. He writes paperback commercial horror novels. He's not Stephen King, but he's got two or three books a year. His books are great. I'm his biggest fan. He told me, Bob, in my best year ever as a novelist, I grossed $50,000. You know, that is the average American wage. If you're a doorman in New York City, you make more than $50,000 with tips. So, you know, and he wants to quit his day job and write, but he can't support his family, his wife and two kids, on $50,000 a year. So he's like this guy. So I'm going to show you now how you can have the best of both worlds. How you can have a great writing career where you have fun and write what you love, but you remain a freelance writer, you don't take a 9-to-5 job, or if you have one, you get out of it, and you make a six-figure income every year. And it could be low or mid or even high, depending on what you choose to do. So the main principle, my tip one, is you use the 80-20 principle, the 80-20 rule. Now, how many people here have heard of the Pareto principle? Yeah, it's an old thing. It basically says that if you have a business, let's say you have a store, 80% of your revenue, your sales, will come from only 20% of your customers, your best customers. But that's not how that's not how I use this ratio. The way I use this ratio is that, and it can be any ratio you want. I recommend on the right, you do 80-20. That's sort of the goal. I tend to do more 90-10. But what 80-20 says is that 80% of your writing is bread and butter writing, stuff that puts groceries on the table or in the refrigerator, pays the rent. I mean, I just said my youngest son just graduated from Carnegie Mellon 2 years ago. Do you want to know how much he wants me to get him his BS? Anybody want to shout out a figure? $250,000. So you got to make money. In fact, many successful success writers, Russ Dalby, Ted Nicholas, have said there's four things in life you need to be happy and have as happy and successful life. Two of them are a career you love and money. The other two happen to be health and relationships. But I can't help you with health and relationships. But in terms of a career you love and money, I'm going to show you how you can have both of those as a writer, because most writers only have one or the other. So you do, the tip one is 80% of what you do is your bread and butter work, employee relations writing, whatever, and the other 20% is your fun stuff, whether it makes money or not. And when you devote yourself to the 80, or you can make it 70 or the 90%, you have so much money that even if the fun stuff makes little or nothing, you can still spend a lot of time doing it. So here was my first low-paying thing. Yeah, what? You need to what? Okay. When I graduated college in the late 70s, and I worked at a corporate job as a technical writer at Westinghouse, and I really liked the people. I was glad I was a writer instead of something else, but, you know, writing technical manuals about aerospace electronics, you know, didn't exactly have me, you know, flapping my arms and jumping up and down, so I wanted to do something else. So Westinghouse was in Baltimore, so I went to the city paper. Anybody from Baltimore here? So you know the city paper. This is 1979. I had never been published, and I said, could I write for you? So I suggested that I do a color piece about the local drag racing out in the sticks where I live. And I wrote this, it's no drag racing at Darcy Track. It was about amateur stock car racing. And I tried my best in this. It's on my website if you want to read it, bly.com. I tried my best to imitate Hunter Thompson. And I don't have a huge ego. It's not Hunter Thompson, but it's not awful terrible. And I got for this, you know, I had to go to the races. I had to interview all the drivers. I had to read up on stock car racing. Not on Google. There was no internet. You know, I had to go home and write the article. Transcribe hours of tape, and I got $50. This isn't that 20% that's fun, but doesn't, you can't pay the bills this way. A number of years later, I'm writing as my main source of my 80 or 90% direct mail copywriting. And that's my main source of income. I am a direct response copywriter, freelance. So I wrote for a product, a guy was selling a course in how to trade options. Anybody ever hear of the name Ken Roberts? This was years ago. He's retired now. Yeah, so you know him. So I wrote for Ken Roberts, and I took a flat fee up front, a few thousand dollars, and a royalty, and within 2 years, he paid me $50,000 for having written this direct mail piece to sell his options trading course. That is 1,000 times the fee City Paper paid me. Do you think this took me 1,000 times? 1,000 times more effort and hours to do? Not at all. So this is, you got to have something that is high pay, that's 80 or 70 or 90% of your time. So low pay to feed your soul, high pay to feed your family. Interestingly, this was very successful mailing. That's why I got a lot of royalties. And the reason was that it played off something that was in the press at the time. Imagine this, Donald Trump. At the time, he was on the press with The Apprentice. And so our headline said, become my next apprentice in the world's greatest business. And the lead of this is all about The Apprentice show and how this guy, you can become his apprentice in options trading. Now, here's tip number two. How many of you write or want to write a book or books? So the people today are scared of writing books because they say, well, you know, the advances, those of you who are published, how many of you are published book authors with mainstream houses? So you know the advances are getting generally smaller and smaller and smaller. Book publishing, I tell people, was a pretty crappy business when I wrote my first book in 1981, and it's gone steadily downhill ever since. But most of us who are writers want, or a lot of us want to write books. And you can make money with books if you know what makes money in books. A lot of writers worry about my advance is only this, my royalty is so small. But the real money in books is the formula TBR equals DBR plus ABR. What does that stand for? Total book revenue equals direct book revenue, which is your advance, your royalties, and your serialization rights, and a few other things, plus ancillary book royalties. What do I mean by that? All the opportunities. You know, why does a local psychologist want to get a book published to promote herself or himself as a psychologist? And it will build your practice. For example, I got a call one day from IBM. They were looking for a consultant to do some speaking, training, and copywriting. And the guy said to me, he was kind of smug with me, he says, well, I've heard of you, but I'm talking to five other direct response consultants. Why should I just pick you? And I had just written and had this book published on business-to-business direct marketing, a business book on direct response. And I got the box of the books literally came to my office that day. You get your new 10 or 20 author's copies. This was a hardcover, really pretty. So I said to the guy on the phone, you know what? I looked at the book. I just got my new book. I'm going to put one in the FedEx to you. So right away, I only got a $6,000 advance from this book, and this was many years ago. So, you know, small advance. It's a very specialized niche subject. And I'll FedEx it to you, and then you decide who you want. 2 days later, he hired me and gave me a retainer for the next year for copywriting and speaking and training for $68,000. So already, my revenue from this book, 3 days after it got published, was 6 plus 68 or $74,000, and just kept growing from then. So for me, the money in my books has mostly been ABR, ancillary book revenue, and it is for a lot of writers, so keep that in mind. And here's another example. I wrote this book called Selling Your Services, and this guy who'd been talking to me about hiring me to write copy for him, but hadn't done anything, you know, was looked on his bookshelf one day as we were in discussions and found this book that he had bought that I had written. And he immediately called me or emailed me, you see the email, and said, let's go. So ABR, ancillary book royalties. So tip number one, the 80-20 formula. Tip number two, you can make money from books if you consider both direct book revenues but also ancillary, which most people ignore. Number three, you should to follow my 80-20 formula. You know, it's so annoying that I do this, and it never bothered me until Trump became president, and you notice he does this all the time, right? And so if I'm talking to my wife and we're arguing, she says, put that finger down or I'll break your hand. She hates Trump, and I don't want to get political, but I did it first. I should sue him, really. I'll tell him, it's copyrighted. And he'll say, no, I came up with it first. I'll go, wrong. So number three is to make that 80-20 formula work, you got to have what I call a high-paying active income source, something you do. So for me, that was launching a copywriting business. And the way I did it, someone asked me recently, how would you do it today? When you start off as a freelance copywriter, and some of you have other, and there's many other things you can do, you don't have to be a copywriter. You know, you can write employee communications. You can write, I know someone who does nothing but write SEO copy, search engine optimization copy for websites, and she makes a six-figure income. I know people who ghostwrite blogs, not for other individuals, but for companies, and they get paid well. Some companies don't pay well for blogs, and we go more into that later, but some will pay you, you know, for, you know, a blog listing, $400 or $500, and it doesn't sound like a lot, but if you write it 500 in 2 hours and you get $500 an hour,
You're making $250 an hour. Not many other people you know are doing that, except your psychiatrist is making more if you have one. But we're not going to medical school, so, or most of us aren't. So, you know, I sent out a letter, you know, paper, and this was in the old days. I launched this in February 1982. I had no experience as a copywriter, but I had a corporate job, and I was asked to move by my employer to Wichita, where their business was located. I think you can guess my employer was the infamous Koch brothers. But back then, they weren't bad guys. No one heard of them. And I worked for David Koch, who then, he was a very good boss. Now what they do, well, I won't comment on it again. But so they asked me to move to Wichita. I said, David, you live in New York. He goes, yeah, but I'm worth $1 billion, so you're going to Wichita. I'm going to stay here. So I quit, and I said, what could I do freelance so I don't have to look for another job? Because this was my second job out of college. I said I could do the copywriting, write the ads, because I didn't really like any other part of the job, but that part I loved. So I became a freelance copywriter, got a list of creative directors at ad agencies that handled industrial and that Koch engineering type accounts, and like Westinghouse and electronics, and sent them a letter. And I mailed out 500 letters, which I, you know, they were pre-printed, and I hand-typed the envelopes, you know, from a directory I got in my little studio on East 81st Street, worked at a kitchen table, mailed out 500 pieces. Next day, go look in the mailbox, no reply cards, no phone calls. Next day, no reply card. This going on for 3 or 4 days. I said, oh my God, I quit my job. I'm not going to be able to get anyone to hire me. Then I get a call from the post office. Come down, you have mail. I go down. There's this pile with a rubber band and a pink slip of 35 reply cards. I got 7% of the people who saw this responded and were interested in hiring me as a copywriter. And my first year of full-time freelance copywriting, which began in around February 1982, my salary when I quit Koch Engineering in January was $27,000 a year, which back then was not bad. I know it sounds like a little bit, but it wasn't bad. This was 1982. And my first year of freelancing, I grossed $39,000. Not a fortune, but that was my goal, to gross equal or more than I was making at Koch. And the next year, I made $87,000. And then the next year, six figures. And every year after that, you know, six figures without fail. So find some kind of writing you like that is an active source of high-paying income. And copywriting is one of them. You know, here was the reply card from my mailing. Here were the results. I actually mailed it in January. No, it's wrong. I mailed it in January 1982. Mailed out 500 pieces. It cost me $500. You can afford. One of the great things about freelance writing, right? It's a low startup cost business. So any kind of freelancing you do, you don't need a lot of capital. Right? I mean, I spent $500 I really didn't have, and you know, the first year I made $39,000. Now, I talked about TBR equals DBR plus ABR. In 1985, I'd only been a copywriter. Now, I started as a staff writer, more technical writer at Westinghouse in 79, so I had about 6 years writing experience. And in 1985, I wrote a book on copywriting, which maybe was a little presumptuous, because I hadn't been doing it that long. But how many of you write how-to or educational materials of any kind? You do it, why? Because when you learn something, right, you're compelled to teach others. It's like I didn't do this to try to, believe it or not, to try to promote myself. I said, I learned this, and so many people don't know how to do it. I want to show people how to do it. So I wrote this book, and what happened is, you know, the publisher sends out galleys to 10 people to try to get quotes. So I said, why don't you send one to David Ogilvy, who back then was the most famous person in advertising. I didn't know him. And he lived in France. They had an airmail into his chateau in France. And amazingly, he wrote back a blurb for me saying that it was a great book. And he sort of skyrocketed or, you know, put my career as a copywriter on the fast track. And it comes as a result of having written this book, getting him to endorse it, which was a pure accident. And then as people began reading this book, what happens when you write a how-to book on what you do as a service, people don't say, oh, now I can do it myself. They go, this is too much work. I'll call the author and have her do it or have him do it. So this sort of made my copywriting career early. And on my website, if you go to bly.com and click on testimonials, I have testimonials from clients. Ogilvy wasn't a client, but his testimonial is in the first position on my testimonials page. And every year since then, we added more testimonials, and it's always in the first position. If I get a great testimonial the next day, like the one here, it goes number two. And then if I get another one that's better, that's number two. David Ogilvy is number one. This is beginning to fade because now, be honest, how many people in this room have never heard of David Ogilvy? That's great that most of you have, but when I started, he was the god of advertising. Now the younger people today, the millennials who are into social media, and as I mentioned to you, I was a speaker this year at Social Media Marketing Network. I asked people in my room, how many know of David Ogilvy? Like two hands went up, which made me want to jump off the stage and, you know, commit Harry Carey or something, but the stage was only this high, so wouldn't really hurt me. So what's happened today is copywriters who are big copywriters today, like Ogilvy was a polite guy, but today's young copywriters are very brash and conceited. So here's a website. Learn copywriting from the greatest copywriter, perhaps the greatest human being who ever walked the earth. Discover how to write copy so powerful, awe-inspiring, it starts to make money for your clients before they mail it. As incredible as that sounds. Yes, that's really me, the copy god in the flesh, and not a picture of Matthew McConaughey I ripped off Google. Would you like to make $100,000 a year as a freelance copywriter? Well, I earned that much money for my copywriting before I ate breakfast this morning. This is fake. I put this up just to make a point. It's a gag. But from this site, people come across it, and they find my site where I sell my books and stuff. I'll tell you more about that later. And it wasn't designed to make money, but I've made $6,700 in passive income from this site. Actually, this is an old slide. We're up to like about 12,000. And again, we didn't search engine optimize it. But yeah, I think it's funny. Some of you may not, but you know, a lot of people laugh at it, the copy guide. And I enjoy it, had fun doing it. That's the other point, remember? 80-20. Nobody paid me to put this up, and I may have made $0. I had to pay my webmaster to design it, put it up, and I host it and have a domain name, but it was fun. And at least 20% of your time, if you're a writer, and for me it's much more than that, because my secret is I even have fun with the 90 or the 80. I like that too. But at least 20% of your time, you gotta have fun, right? Or if it's not fun, you could be a dentist or an orthodontist or an insurance agent or something like that, like my dad was. So one of my secrets in promoting myself as a copywriter, figure out what kind of writer you are. Like the guy who just introduced me writes about the horse racing industry. So I think they call them turf journalists. So he would want to optimize his site for turf journalist or horse writer or freelance horse writer. You can figure out, because it's easy to do, you can figure out what term people are searching on when they look for a writer or a consultant like you, and optimize your site for it. And if you search Google the term direct response copywriter, I almost always show up on the first page of the SERP, search engine results page. And when you do that, people find you. If you're not on the first screen, people don't find you. Now, if you're a local business, it's easier because you can just do, freelance horse rider Yonkers. But my business is global. I have clients hiring me from all over the world, so it's harder to get first, for non-local. Now, I said tip three was having an active, a source of active writing income. Because copywriters, although I love it, you're like a dentist. They also make a lot of money, but their income is active as well. The dentists have a saying in their profession, if you're not drilling and filling, you're not billing. They only get paid when they work. But wouldn't it be good, like with the copy guy, to make money when you're not working? To make money, when I come in the morning, I turn on my computer, and I've made a few hundred dollars overnight from my passive income. Now, you can have any source of passive income you want, but since you're writers, the best, I believe, for a writer, a freelance writer, traditional freelance writer, selling information products, educational materials online, is the ideal, perfect second business the source of passive income. So I say, if you're looking for a source of passive income, now there are others. How many of you, and I do a little bit, I don't like it that much, you have investment income producing properties. You invest in real estate. So that's another source, and you need that. For me, I we have a couple of properties. I hate it, actually. Yeah, it's a headache. But some people love it, and you can make a fortune with it. You can make a fortune with passive income. So you write and sell simple information on the internet. Four skills you need to have money with an information business online, not selling merchandise, but information. You've got to be able to create content people will buy. You got to be able to write sales copy that'll get them to buy it. You got to understand the basics of marketing because it's a marketing business. It's an information marketing business. And you got to do the technical stuff like putting up the designing your site in HTML. ASJA members, because you're writers, you already have 1, 2, or 3. You have even if you don't know it, you have the innate ability. You can write your own content. You can learn easily to write your own copy. And you can do marketing. You know, your writers are marketers. You sell your articles to magazines. You sell your proposals to book publishers. So we have a huge advantage over other people that want to get into this business because we can do 3 of the 4 things. And the 4th thing, which is technical, don't go out and learn JavaScript or HTML or Visual Basic. Hire someone. Outsource all the technical stuff. I can't do any of it. And to do it would actually be a waste of my time when I could be spent doing these other 3 things. Now, here's the secret, going on what I just said. The profits in online marketing, or selling any product on the internet, are not just S, the sales, how much you get in orders, but it's S minus E, the expenses. So that you have to learn, and I teach people, for the little guy, the little gal, the internet marketer like me, you know, small fries, small potatoes, I'm not Amazon, I have a little tiny internet business. You have to keep your costs low, and there are sources of low-cost hosting. I have a website. I have, for my business, I have a website for each product. I have over 100 websites. I pay less than 50 cents a month per site to host them. How many people pay just 50 cents to get their site hosted? So I teach people to do that. You need low-cost web design. I have a full-time webmaster employed by me. He's not legally an employee. He's an outsourced vendor. But, I have all of his time. How can I afford that? He's in the Philippines. He gets $700 a month. That's like the CEO of a major corporation. You know, I could, for $700, I couldn't get 1 good site designed here. So you outsource. You write your own copy. You can all learn copywriting. You're already writers. You know 80% of what you know. Just a few. Yeah?
How did you find him to know that he was legit?
Here's the thing. The question, I don't want to go into the details of that now, and we will have a question and answer. So if you want to ask more details about that later, we'll step up to the mic back there and we'll go into more detail. But this is friend of a friend. You get involved in the world of internet marketing. You go to a couple of conferences. You see them advertised all the time, right? Internet marketing conference. Get rich on the internet. You go to the conference. Not so much for what you learn, but who you meet. And you ask people who are already doing it, like me. Oh, who are you doing? And they go, I know this great guy, this great gal, and so affordable. Because there are some people out there that price themselves to be affordable. Also, Fiverr is a good source. Now, I have problems with Fiverr because I won't let anybody do anything for $5 for me. You know, I pay them more than they ask. But you know, Fiverr is a site where you can get people to like design a web page for $5 or record a voiceover for $5. FIVERR.com. So you need to keep costs low. And what you need to start this business is you need to have how many people here have an e-newsletter that you send to your clients? You're already ahead of the game. If you ever want to get into internet marketing, start building your list. Because I bet your lists are how many of you think you have a big list? Yeah, you need a bigger list. But you can do that. You already got the names you got. You add more names. So I have an e-newsletter. I have 65,000 subscribers. I have a list of subscribers, so I have the e-newsletter that goes out, the e-list. I have information products, and I'll show you how you get those really easily. You have emails that you send out to your list saying, some of them are content, here's some useful information on the topic of my newsletter, which in my case is entrepreneurial. It straddles a couple of topics, but it's mainly small business, marketing, and freelancing. And things that are related, like consulting and making money as a speaker, things like that. So I send out emails, and some of them are useful tips, and some of them say, hey, I have this great product that'll help you with this. Why don't you buy it? Like, I've got a product on how to find low-cost vendors for your internet business. If you got an email on that, you would probably buy it. But and then you need what's called landing pages. Remember I said I had 100 websites? I don't have 100 full websites. I have 100 what we call micro-sites or mini-sites. It's a little site that just sells one product. And so all of these things need writing. And most people out there who want to do this as a business opportunity fail because they can't do the writing and they can't afford to hire us to do it. They don't have any money. But we can do all of our writing. So we have a huge advantage. Here's my opt-in page for my newsletter. Let's take it on the question. Would you mind if we do it in the question and answer? Because they're telling me I have to make people sort of step up to the microphone. So you put up a page. Here's my site is bly.com. My opt-in for my newsletter is bly.com/reports. And what's different about this than your opt-in page? Get 4 free special reports from Bob Bly worth over $100. You just can't offer a free newsletter. You got to give someone a bribe. This is called a free-on-free page. To get someone to take a free thing from you, a newsletter, which is amazing because it's free, you actually have to bribe them with a free gift. And my free gift has a retail value of over $100. And this page gets a 49% conversion rate, which means of every 2 people who come across this, one of them opts into my list. And that's what you need. So I have a text e-zine. It looks like that. You can see how easy it is to write. Now, the Agora model says that what you do with your marketing, if you have an internet business, is you don't do all this marketing, social media, blogging, pay-per-click, to sell products directly. You get them to go to your opt-in page. So all of these traffic generation methods in the yellow ovals goes to that free e-zine page. And that's how you build your list. And then once you have your list, that's here. Anybody who ever wanted to do an internet marketing business, once you have your list, that is the most valuable asset you own in online marketing. Because you own it, you control it, and those people will buy for you 10 times the rate that any other group will. And information products you can sell, books, ebooks, audios, videos, DVDs, you know, the list is endless. Webinars, e-classes, membership sites, you can sell consulting, writing services, seminars, conferences. And again, there are all sorts of sources for products. Now, you guys are writers. You can write your own ebooks. You can write and produce your own podcasts and webinars. But if you can't, there's all sorts of other sources. For example, on the left, 3 squares down, public domain. How many people knew this? The U.S. government is the largest publisher of information in the United States, and most of their work, 99% of it, is not copyrighted protected. You could literally, we'll do it on the Q&A, okay? Yeah, you know it. Right, so their work is not copyrighted protected, which means anybody could take their stuff, repackage it, and sell it. And in my course on internet marketing, I explain how that is. You say, how could you sell it if they give it away for free? They're the biggest publisher. They produce great stuff, but they're also the worst marketer. They don't proactively market any of their content, so no one knows about it. So if you can either sell it as is or repackage it, and I've done this several times, and you can make a product out of it. If you don't feel like you want to write an ebook, you can give a talk like this, have it recorded as this one is being recorded, and sell it as an audio streaming MP3, a downloadable MP3. A streaming video MP4, or you can sell it on an audio CD or a DVD. Wrong way. So, you know, here's an example. This is old. On June 25th, I sent this email to my list, and what I did is I took all the forms I used in my freelance writing business, mainly copywriting, but also as a book author, and I just put them in a PDF. I called it the Copywriter's Toolkit. I sent out an email selling the PDF, $49. It took me less than 10 minutes to write this email. And from this email, within 48 hours, we got over $10,000 worth of orders. Passive income. I didn't have to do anything to earn it. So that helps you with that 80-20. You know, if in the money end of your writing business, it's all active income. You're constantly writing new articles, pitching editors, doing rewrites, and none of it's passive income. You can do that, but you're going to get tired. You might burn out. So wouldn't it be great to have a second source of income? I think everyone who's self-employed should have multiple streams of income. Remember Robert Allen, that was his best-selling book, Multiple Streams of Income. You should have more than one stream of income. And for writers, you should have a passive source of income. Now, book authors do have that because they have royalties, but most get pretty small royalties. So this is a more profitable way to achieve this. For example, I wrote a book on PR years ago, and it was a 200-page book, and it sold for $10, and I got an 8% royalty. And so every time I sold one and my agent took out his commission, we got 72 cents. When the book went out of print, and authors, always in your book contract, make sure there's a reversion of rights clause, right? That when the book goes out of print, the rights revert to you and the book. When you sign the contract, it should be copyrighted in your name, not the publisher's name. And then as soon as it went out of print, I scanned it. I broke it up into 350-page ebooks that sold for $29 each. So when someone orders that content now, I get, instead of 72 cents for the same money, no extra work, I get $87. And I make so much more money on my info marketing business than from the traditional book. And in my first ebook, I didn't even write it. Had anybody seen any of the columns I'd written for The Writer or Writer's Digest on copywriting or corporate writing? So all I did is, when you do an article, you type in the upper left corner of the manuscript the words, first rights only. So you keep the rights. So I owned all the rights to those articles. And when I finally decided to get into info marketing in 2004, I said, well, what could be my first product? And I said, I'll just take those articles and scan them and put them into an ebook, which I call Write and Grow Rich. So, and we charged $39. I'd already been paid $7,500 by the writing magazines to write the articles, but I had all the rights. And so far since then, we haven't made a fortune, but reselling these articles as an ebook, which takes none of my active time, I've made an extra $38,000 plus out of them so far. So I'm very big on information marketing. And here's the page where that's the book. Okay, I'll skip that. So here's another one of my landing pages for one of my books. Remembered I said little websites, one sells each product. So basically, when you're a traditional freelance writer, you're trading, like a dentist, you're trading time for money. That's the downside of the freelance writing profession that we're in, really, is that unless you're drilling and filling, you're not billing. But when you have a passive source of income, like internet information marketing or book royalties, an author I know and I'm friendly with, some of you may know his name, Harlan Ellison, you know, he makes passive income because when he writes like a TV show, like a Star Trek episode, he's very rigid about his rights and he keeps as many of them as they can. So he'll have the rights to the script. So the TV show owns the TV rights, but he owns the physical script. So he's been republishing his scripts, facsimiles of them, in books. I don't know if any of you have seen them, called Brain Movies. So he's making money, passive income, selling those online. Tip number 5, do something different. Remember I said, if you do the 80-90, you're going to make a six-figure income. But if all I did all day was write copy for corporate clients, or even do my information marketing, I'd go nuts. So occasionally throughout the years, I've been writing for my own pleasure short stories. And like 2 years ago, I put out a little thin ebook on CreateSpace and Kindle of like 10 of the stories. I get a call from publishing house, Quill Driver Books in California, saying, we like these, do you have more? And I said, yeah. And so last year, I had my first book of fiction, a short story collection, Freak Show of the Gods and Other Stories of the Bizarre, published, which was sort of scratched an itch for me, and I still write the occasional short story. You know, the money from this, very small, very insignificant. The psychic reward for me, very great, just enjoyable. Something else different. One day I was home, And my wife was watching Kathy Lee Gifford, and Kathy Lee said something I thought was kind of obnoxious. And I said, oh, I hate Kathy Lee Gifford. And as soon as I said, I hate Kathy Lee Gifford, I said, that's a book. And I ran to my office, and I phoned my agent, and I said, Donald, the I Hate Kathy Lee Gee book, Kathy Lee Gifford book. And he said, send me a proposal. I wrote a 2-page proposal, and then added my bio, sent it to him. A week later, he said, Kensington wants to do the book. I didn't make a fortune from this. I sort of brought down the wrath of my wife, who didn't forgive me for this for many years. She didn't like that I did it, but I had some cool things happen. Remember the show CBS Hard Copy that used to be on? They did a feature on me. I was a guest on Hard Copy about this book, and the National Enquirer, of all places, did a full-page article about the book with a fake Kathy Lee Gifford interview, I think fake, saying if she ever saw me in Connecticut, she would beat the hell out of me. It's a true story, if you search the National Enquirer. So, if you want to sell a book, you could write a book proposal and give it to an agent and get a contract. This slide is wrong. You could sell it directly to a publisher, but it's better to get a literary agent. And at these conferences, you have agents here and you have opportunities to meet them. So my thing, and I've done a lot of book writing, even though I'm mainly a copywriter. As he mentioned, I've written 90 books by mainstream publishers, only a few self-published. And I believe in getting an agent. And you can get them here, aar.online.org, at their society. I won't go, just because of time, I won't go into how to write books. Speaking is good ancillary activity for authors. When you write a book or become a writer, you'll get asked to speak, and you'll get asked a lot of times for free. But if you do it enough times, you'll get asked to do it on a paid basis. And here, if you do it for free, and you do it at a group where the people in the group can hire you, like here I spoke at the Specialized Information Newsletters Publishers Association, and I gave a talk, and I didn't charge on marketing information products. A guy came out of the crowd and said, would you write 2 direct mail packages for me? And I got a purchase order the next day for 10 grand. So you can make ancillary income. You can also get paid high speaking fees. I'm not a top speaker, but I regularly speak to corporations, and I get for a full day training session on the topics I teach, which are mainly technical writing and business writing, I get $5,500. It's not a fortune, for a day, it's not bad, and I've got more. Number 7, have fun. When I entered freelance writing in the 80s, what was the staple of the freelance writer? It was writing magazine articles. Magazines today are different than they were 30 years ago, you know that. And you hear the editors talking about it, and there's an online component, there's their blog. But then it was just a print magazine, and that was the staple of the freelance writer. And most of it didn't pay a fortune, but it could be regular work, and so I supplemented my income writing articles. And I still think today, for a writer, adding those to your writing articles for magazines to your profit center is, even though it doesn't pay a fortune in most cases, is a nice second stream of income. Number 8, as I mentioned, I publish a free e-newsletter. And when I first did it, I just did it to keep in touch with my readers, website visitors. I didn't have anything to sell them. Then I did it to keep in touch with my clients, but I didn't sell them anything directly. But luckily, when I got into internet marketing, happy accident, having an e-newsletter is gold on the internet in marketing either information products, which is what I urge you to do, or if you want merchandise. And I have some friends who are writers that they prefer to sell merchandise. But either way, an e-newsletter is the ticket in. And you don't have to have a large subscriber base if they're good, loyal buyers. But ideally, you want to have, proportionally, the larger the list, the more money you will make. Now, you have to evolve. When I started out as a copywriter, you have to change with the times. And that's what these conferences, I think, are all about, right? Writing and the world and everything has changed so much. 50, 60, 70% of people look at the websites you put up and write today on a smartphone? I don't get that. I'm a Luddite. I don't
I don't use a laptop or a smartphone. I work at a desktop, you know, an old Dell desktop. So you have to change with the times. So when I started as a freelance copywriter, I did mainly industrial type stuff, like I mentioned, working for Koch Brothers and Westinghouse Engineering. But then computers, not the internet yet, but computers. Remember when the PC first came out? And that was all new. And I got more and more companies saying, do you know anything about computers? Do you know, can you write for software? And I didn't have a computer background. So a publisher at the same time asked me, do you have an idea for a book for people learning computers? So I wrote a dictionary of computer words for them, and it became my way into the computers. So people would call me and say, do you know anything about computers? I said, oh, I wrote the Puffin Dictionary of Computer Words. That's all they needed to hear. People, when people see that you've written a book on a subject, they assume rightly or wrongly, more often wrongly, that you're an expert. And why disabuse them of that notion? Let them, you know, let them believe it. So when I say the secret of Minnesota Fats, who was the great pool player, anybody know that name, Minnesota Fats? Yeah, he said it's not enough to hit the ball into the pocket. You have to hit it so it rolls into position for the next shot. And that's what you have to do in your career. So evolve, as I say. Once I wrote the book, I said, what computer certification, IT certification could I get? Stop the time. What that could I get that would further credentialize me in this area? And I looked around. I found the easiest credential to get was something called a Certified Novell Administrator. I didn't even know what it was, but it took one course. I took the course. I got the certificate. And now people said to me, what do you know? I said, well, I wrote the Puffin Dictionary of Computer Words, and I'm a Certified Novell Administrator. That was it. I was in. What I think is it's like the Beast. Remember the movie The Beast with Five Fingers, where his hand's uncontrollable, he has to saw it off? That also happened in, what's that Bruce Campbell movie? Army of Darkness, where he saws off his hand because it's possessed. So you have to, if you have active income mainly, now, how many of you have mainly active income from your writing? So if you have active income, you have to maximize ROTI. You just have to get the, and you have to increase your return on time invested. So some ways you can do that are with royalties, by subcontracting some of your work, by having employees. I have a full-time employee for my internet marketing business, not the guy I'm talking about, the webmaster. I have one in the United States. She's my full-time employee. You can subcontract. You can form a writing agency. You can boost your passive income. You have to be efficient with the use of your time. Isaac Asimov is one of the most prolific writers of all time. His secret was, he said, my secret of being productive is always have more than one project going at one time. I know, I meet a lot of writers who tell me, oh, I'm working on a book. Once I was on a panel with a guy, all he was working on was his book. It took him 6 years to do it. I always say to writers, how many of you have more than one project right now? You're the right path. Because what happens? You're working on a project, and you get tired after 3 hours. If you had no other project, what are you going to do? Now you switch to project B. If you work another 3 hours, and you still got 2 hours left in the day, you switch to the third project. So I always have at least 10 writing projects so I can switch back and forth. George Simenon, how many people know him? He was one of the world's most prolific writers. He wrote 575 novels and nonfiction books. And he said he did seat of the pants writing. The way he wrote so much is he kept the seat of his pants in his seat, the chair. And the reason he did that, he said, I use a simple vocabulary. That way I never have to get up and go get the dictionary. Again, pre-internet, pre-computer. So I'm going to skip that for time. The most important decision you'll ever be able to make is what niche are you going to write in? Are you going to cover gardening? Are you going to cover tech? Like the session before me in here, early in the morning, was on writing on tech. Is that a good niche for you or me? You have to ask yourself, what do I like? What am I interested in? What am I good at? What do I have aptitude for? What education? What do I know? What's my experience? What pays well and has the least competition? So I'm going to skip that. So some tips for building your writing practice. Get samples of your work. This is really important in the internet age. Every writer should have a website. And you want to stock it like you stock a trout pond. with great testimonials from clients and samples of your work. So when, you know, and you, if you're doing private work for clients, you don't post their stuff without getting permission. So when you finish something that you think would be a great sample on your write-up portfolio, you say to the client, can I put this on my website? And 9 out of 10 say yes, and I have 1 out of 10 that say no, we don't want our competitors to see it, and I don't post it. That's just the luck of the draw. Make your website work for you. What makes, I get one lead or two, one or two leads at least every day just from my website asking me to write for them for with no prospecting. I mentioned to you that I was search engine optimized, but why do people landing on this website, why do I get inquiries? What's the secret? It's in the upper right corner. The hot spot on a website for calls to action, click here to take an action, is the upper right corner of the homepage. Most websites for writers and other businesses, it's wasted, it's color, it's words, it's signing in for a newsletter. Mine says, need great copy, click here now, and you go to a, and you go to a, well, I'll skip that. We're running a little short in time, so I'm going to, yeah, and it goes to a, and it goes to a form where you can fill out and express interest in my copywriting topics. One of the early speakers in the morning mentioned that he had an article idea and it didn't fly, but instead of forgetting about it, he put it in his drawer and he tried it again later, and then he sold it. Anything that you do should not be wasted. You can recycle almost everything that you do in some way. Stuff you've sold, you retain the rights to it, you resell it again and again. Stuff you wrote that the client didn't accept, that you own the rights to, or that didn't get published. Like I had written, when I got out of college, I wanted to write a book, so I thought, I love comic books. And this was before the comic book superhero movies were big like they are now. So I wrote a book of comic book trivia, a comic book collector. Couldn't sell it, didn't know the publishing world, you know, worked at Westinghouse in Baltimore, was not in New York City, didn't have a literary agent. So I put the manuscript in a drawer. 6 years later, I had written 4 or 5 books. I was going through the drawer, literally found it, forgotten. And I said, you know, instead of throwing this in the garbage, I made a photocopy and put it in an envelope and scribbled on it, post-it note to my agent, what do you think? 4 weeks later, I forgot about it. She called, she says, Carol Publishing wants to publish your comic book book. So if I had just forgotten about it, it would have been wasted effort and no money and no publishing credit. So, you know, if at first you don't succeed, what did Winston Churchill famously say at the commencement speech he gave? Never, never give up. He gave a 4-word commencement speech. He was hired to give one. He just got up, looked at them and said, never, never give up, and sat back down. Never give up on stuff. My book, Stan Lee loved my book so much, he sent me an autographed picture. That's a lie. A friend of mine knows Stan Lee and got it for me, but looks good in the slide. Keep trying new things, even if you fail. I have plenty of things I've failed at. For a while, I was trying cartooning. I never sold one cartoon to Robert Mankoff, who recently retired from The New Yorker. Anybody ever sell a cartoon to The New Yorker? It's so, you know, and he was so negative and not nice about it. So, but I kept. Here's one of mine. Obviously the work of a serial killer. I mean, it's the worst thing you've ever seen, right? But he wasn't really nice about it. I think it's kind of funny. But I failed with cartoons. For decades, I wrote the occasional short story and sent it to a science fiction magazine. I sold like one story in like 20 years. And then one day I put some of them on Kindle, and a mid-list publisher, you know, major mainstream publisher, and says, if you have 30 more of these, we'll do a book. And they did. Novels. I've never written a novel. Here's an important lesson. Why have I never gotten a novel published? Because I have never written a novel. That's the guarantee. You can't guarantee that you're going to get a novel published. The only way to guarantee that is not to write one. And the thing is, I want to. But my fictional ideas, I've never had a fictional idea that I thought could sustain novel-length treatment. All my ideas are short stories. That's what they are. So that's not going to happen. Here was another cartoon. The Lobster Family Reunion goes terribly wrong. Okay, now I see why he rejected it. Not many people are there. So he wasn't as stupid as the mean anonymous letter I sent him said.
I don't know anyone who talks to me that way unless he earns a six-figure income. We saw that one. Bonus tip, when you get a good idea, jump on it. Probably 1,000 other people have seen Kathy, or 10,000 have seen Kathy Lee Gifford at one time or another and said, oh, I hate Kathy Lee Gifford. And a lot of them are writers. But I'm the only one who had the book because when I got the idea, I did something with it. Ideas, people would say, oh, I have an idea for something. Bob, if you write it, I'll split it with you. I said, no, I'll tell you what. I'll give you an idea. You write it. I'll split it with you. Because ideas are nothing. They're a dime a dozen. It's action. Ideas without action are worthless. And you make money by taking ideas on what you write. So we're running out of time. So let me give you 7 quick tips for pricing freelance writing services. Number one, raise fees only when justified by excessive demand and the quality of your work. You know, I have some people who write ebooks for my online business. And the guy says, I can't do it for X. I want 2X. Well, if I got 20 other people who can do it for X, I'm not going to pay you 2X unless your book was a really good seller or you're bringing me something that the other writers don't have. Or maybe just do it now. When I started, I charged low prices, and I said, you only should raise your prices when you had experience. So a writer came to me, asked for advice on how to get into freelance copywriting, called me the next week. He got his first client, international paper, and he was charging for ads for them 3 times what I was getting at the same time. So maybe my advice number one wasn't so good. Middle of 2/3 pricing formula, your price for writing projects is ideally in the middle of the top third of the range. If you charge in the bottom third of the range, people automatically assume you're no good, your price is too low. Nobody values what's cheap. The middle, you're just average. The top third, you're good. But you should be in the middle of the top there, because if you're at the very top, you make it so hard for people to hire you that they cringe when they hear the price, and you don't want that. Get half upfront, number 4, on every job from every client. Always get it in writing. Writers will say to me, oh, client's not paying me, or they want 5 more revisions. And I say, well, what's in your contract regarding revisions or payment? Oh, we didn't have one. And then you're screwed. You need a written contract from you to the client, from the client to you, from you to the client, publisher to you, or you have no agreement. The double pipeline secret to being in a position to stick with your price and not back down, do enough self-promotion marketing, write enough queries, do enough promotion that you're getting twice as many opportunities for projects as you can handle. Because when you have twice as much as you can handle, and someone says, no, I only want to pay $20, then you're cool to say, that's not for me. But if it's the only job in front of you and you need the $20 to buy, you know, a TV dinner that night, you're going to take it. So you have twice the amount of business offered to you by doing twice the marketing other writers do. And the outside income secret to being in a position to stick with your price quote, when Isaac Asimov was at Boston University as a biochemistry professor, the other professor said, you're always pissing the administration off. Aren't you afraid they're going to fire you? And he said, no. And they said, why not? He says, 2 words, outside income. When I only wrote copy freelance, and that was my only income, yeah, I was worried that I would lose a job or I would lose a client. But when you have multiple streams of income and more work than you can handle, then you can stick with your price quote and not underbid yourself, because most people cave in negotiations, and the technique they teach is be psychologically strong even if you don't have the facts to back it up. I can't do that. So I have to actually be in the situation where I can afford to tell the prospect of the client, look, and I say all the time, you know, you're thinking of hiring another writer, go talk to them. And I'm okay either way. And there's a technique in selling. Anybody here, was anybody here ever a salesperson called the takeaway close, which says the more you tell someone they can't hire you or can't have you, the more they want you. So you can use the takeaway close, being backed by having outside income. I want to thank you for your attention today. If anyone did have a question, if you could step up to the microphone, we're almost out of time. It's in the aisle. If not, I'll hang around here for a few minutes to talk to you. I want to thank you for your attention. You've been a great group, and here comes a questioner. Thank you.
Hi. I'm just wondering, like, I've only been doing freelancing full-time for about 7 months, and I would really like to make more passive income, but I'm not nearly, like, remotely as established as you are. How do you get to that level?
It is the easiest of all these things to get into that I showed you. Writing books for publishers, which I do. Mm-hmm. Writing copy for corporate clients, which I do. The internet information marketing business is the, you don't need credentials to get into it.
Okay.
There's so many people who have had success. It is the big business opportunity of the 21st century. And if you know how to do it, you know, if you can master even, there's like 25 techniques that can make you rich in internet marketing. All you have to do is master one or two. Google pay-per-click ads, search engine optimization, and you can have a big success. It's not a difficult business to get into. And again, you know, I'm not teaching a course in it here, but I do have a book you could buy on Amazon. Used, it was published by Quill Driver again, called How to Write and Sell Simple Information for Fun and Profit. That's all about how to do it, and I think you can get for a few bucks on Amazon, a copy used.
Okay.
So check that out. Or I talk to you in the hallway about it.
Okay,
so that,
cool.
That has the least barrier to entry than almost any writing job I know.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. This is so informative. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been my understanding that everything that you put out on the internet should go back to your website, to your URL, to your .com. And you're saying that you've had hundreds of landing pages that are here, there, and everywhere. Do those have your homepage on them?
Here's what we do. Remember the Agora model slide I showed you? We drive everything, and I'll see if I can go to it. I drive everything. Let's see if I can find it real quickly. Well, I'll just say it. I drive everything to www.bly.com/reports because I want to build my list. My SEO, though, when you do SEO, it drives traffic to the main website. So, but there, what you do, if you drive a lot of traffic to your main website, you have lots of prominent calls to action. You didn't see the whole site. Go to bly.com. You'll see at least 3 prominent calls to action. So you get people who either go into your list or if not, say, hey, I might have a writing assignment.
Hi, how are you? Just a quick question. In terms of marketing and kind of self-promotion, if you have limited time for that type of thing, what's your opinion between a blog and a newsletter, if you could only prioritize one?
Now, this is prejudice. It's my opinion. It's not a fact. I think a newsletter is 10 times better than a blog. Here's the reason. A blog, you don't really control it. Yes, you have an RSS feed, but feed, you don't control that feed. People sign up for the feed, it goes out, and they either get it or not. But when you have an e-newsletter, you own that list. You can reach out to them, send them anything you want, and they'll get it. That doesn't mean they'll open it, because your open rate is 100%, but they'll get it. And you can offer your list to others through what's called affiliate deals. You can say, I'll promote your product to my list, because I control it. And if your product's a $20 book, for every copy I sell, you get the order, and you send me my commission of $10 a book, 50% commission, or whatever I charge. So I am much more in favor of an e-newsletter. Having said that, yes, there are lots of blog advocates. But here's the problem with doing both. Everybody says, well, do both. Do an e-newsletter. Do a blog. Do a podcast. You have limited time, as you said, limited bandwidth. So I would say choose one primary information dissemination vehicle. And for online marketing and freelance writers, I think it should be the e-newsletter. All right, I think we're out of time, and I'm being told we have to leave. If you guys want to talk, come up to the podium, or I'll meet you in the hallway. And I thank you. Thanks, guys.